This is the Public Radio Hour, a weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. Tonight, our Black History Month series concludes as we talk with two Huntsville music educators. Oakwood Academy Choir Director Justin Jordan explores how music helps us tell the real story of America.
So I think the way that we gain the full story is through not necessarily looking in the books, but actually having relationships with one another so that we can learn from experience.
We'll also meet Mario Maitland, who's on a mission to help young people turn a love for the arts into a career.
What I feel like is my importance here is to show that, hey, number one, the arts can be a career. But number two, the arts has a place in the modern world. You just have to know how to connect the arts with the modern world. Not to mention all the technology that's involved in the arts now.
And we'll learn about civil rights legend Ruby Sales. That's coming up on tonight's Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, right after this news update. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, our weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. I'm Brett Tannehill. This month we've been honoring Black History Month, and tonight our finale brings us insight from two of Huntsville's best music educators. Later this hour, Beth Norwood sits down with Oakwood University Academy Choir Director Justin Jordan for some real talk about how music helps us tell the story of America. We'll also hear about civil rights figure Ruby Sales. But first, WLRH Community Newsroom producer Tim Miller speaks with Mario Maitland of the Maitland Conservatory. As a young person, Maitland learned to play piano and violin, toured Europe, and realized a career in the arts is actually possible. Now, he hopes to create that same opportunity for a new generation.
Huntsville is a very technological type of city. You know, we're very big in technology, engineering. You know, you have NASA here, you have the Arsenal. And I think that sometimes the arts often gets placed into a certain category to where it's relegated to just like a hobby. So what I feel like is my importance here is to show that, hey, number one, the arts can be a career. But number two, the arts has a place in the modern world. You just have to know how to connect the arts with the modern world. Not to mention all the technology that's involved in the arts now. I mean, here it is, we're sitting in a studio now where, you know, we create music for television shows and movies, and it's not made in the traditional way you would think, where you bring in a violinist and they play different tracks. No, we can create all this stuff digitally. So I think by us being here, not only do we bring the arts to the forefront, but we bring the arts to the forefront and give it a place in the modern world. But a conservatory, in short terms, is a place of intense study. Whatever that study is, you're there to study the subject area super intensively. You know, that's what it is, and to delve all the way into it. So the Maitland Conservatory, a lot of people would ask me, well, you do music here, why don't you just call it a music school or, you know, a music conservatory? And my simple answer to that is because the Maitland Conservatory is larger than just music. Mm. It's larger than just a music conservatory. When you hear music school, music conservatory, you automatically place it into a box of six-year-olds just taking piano lessons, and it's cute. Mm-hmm. But we are a place where we're creating careers for creatives, and we're creating careers for people who want to go into a certain field of the arts and make a living out of it. So therefore, what we do is when you come in, even if you're taking piano lessons or voice lessons, we create customized tracks and programs to help you achieve the careers that you're trying to achieve. So again, going back to what a conservatory is, a place of intense study. And that's why we're called Maitland Conservatory. Plus, it also leaves us open to be able to add more programming to our to what we do.
If you could improve one thing about the conservatory or about music schools, things like that, what would be one thing that you would improve about the industry?
Probably the access to equipment and advancement opportunities. I think a lot of the advancement opportunities that are available in the industry and in kind of the quote-unquote music school circuit, most of the time those opportunities are only available to collegiate-level students. And I do believe that while collegiate-level programs are extremely important, it's important to be able to offer access to things before that level. You know, i.e., that's why you have like AP classes in school, right? They're giving students who are excelling at something or want to go further in something, they're giving them an advanced placement type of opportunity to set them up for future opportunities. In some cases, students are doing dual enrollment in high school where they're taking college credit for certain classes. So why can't we do that in the arts where you may be taking piano lessons, or you may be taking music production lessons, but you're studying in a way at age 12 that sets you up for age 18 or age 19, to where you possibly could get a career before you get to collegiate level, or when you get to collegiate level, the opportunities are expanded, and you have a lot more opportunities to choose from.
So far in your career, what's been a memorable moment that you've had?
I would have to say one of those memorable moments, I had a student one time, actually it was an intern, who was interning with us, and he was going through the process, interning, helping out, so on and so forth, and he mentioned to me that from doing this, he had found what he loved and wanted to take it a step further. So he decided to go a step further and apply for a college program in Nashville, Belmont. Mm. Got into that program. Long story short, now this guy is working in the industry. I mean, he's working with major artists, major celebrities, working for a management company, everything. And when I started to see the things pouring on social media and see the images of what he was doing and everything like that, it just kind of reminded me as to why we're here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have those moments in business where you want to give up. You know, it gets tough at times, but it's when you have moments like that that it reminds you of why you can't give up. And that moment definitely sticks out in my mind.
In terms of what you do in teaching these different classes and different courses, take us into what is it you're thinking while you're teaching or while you're going through these courses and working with the children and teaching. What are some of the thoughts that you're having while you're teaching courses?
Well, that's a really good question, because sometimes in teaching we resort to cookie cutter methods. One of the things I'm always thinking when I'm working with a student is, how does this student learn? Okay, what do they react to? What do they react positively to? What do they react negatively to? What potentially is their drive? For example, it just actually happened today. I was doing a makeup lesson with a student, and she's a young girl. She's 7 years old, you know, learning how to read the piano, so on and so forth. But we also started teaching her how to play by ear as well, too. Be able to listen to songs, play those songs, and she sings, too, to be able to sing along with it. And she's getting ready for this big Black History program. And as she was playing today, I just saw that, hey, instead of doing 60-40 with more of the reading in the 60, we're going to need to focus on the ear side a little bit more, but still, you know, push out the theory component and the reading component as well, too. But the reason why is because she has a natural inclination towards this, towards performance, playing and singing. Now I'm finding out from her parents that she's getting engagements. This is at age 7. She's got a couple of engagements at the end of the month. She's got one next weekend. And, you know, so it's important when you're working with somebody to not make them fit into your mold, but to see what it is that they want and need. And sometimes they don't even know that. Mm-hmm. And then you take the things that that you think are necessary to help support that, and you add those to it. This is going to sound so crazy for me to say this, but the absolute best quote I heard about teaching, I was watching Kung Fu Panda 3. And the turtle was talking to the little raccoon, I think he is. And the turtle said to the teacher, he said, "I don't teach you to make you like me. I teach you to make you you." And I said, man, why is that so powerful in a cartoon movie?
Yeah.
But that is so true. We're not teaching someone to turn them into us.
Right.
We're teaching someone to turn them into them, whoever they are supposed to be.
What are some of the industries or businesses that children or people learning these things can go into, like film scoring and things like that? By learning these things, what are some of the industries that children can take and avenues in this?
Avenues. All right. Well, there's so many. I'm going to try to narrow it down a little bit. Let's start with just the instrumental side. You're taking violin lessons in school. Most people say, well, what can you do with violin lessons? Well, there's a lot you can do. Not only can you, you know, learn to play the violin, play in an orchestra, and yes, you can end up in a touring orchestra. There's lots of touring orchestras. I actually got an opportunity to play in one, the Rome Festival Orchestra. Back when I was 21, I won a piano competition, sent me to Italy. So I debuted as a concert pianist, and I also played with the Rome Festival Orchestra in the second violin section. So I got to travel around Europe doing operas. I played Così fan tutti and all these operas, which was a beautiful experience to do that. But then you take it a step further and jump into the modern world. We know we have movies, and we talk about the film composer, but we forget about the musician that plays the music. Yeah. There's film orchestras that's what they do is play the music for films and record them. So imagine you could take your skills and now use them and say, hey, I played in the first violin section of Inception, you know, the movie Inception. That's me. You hear me right there, you know, or even as a soloist, you know, brilliant composers like Hans Zimmer, who does the music for Dark Knight and Pirates of the Caribbean. Let's take it a step further. Let's go to something like the electric guitar.
Yeah.
Most time you only think of a rock band with that. Well, I forgot his name, but there was a real famous electric guitar player that was brought in to do the sound effects for the Transformers movie. Mm-hmm. All the sounds of like the gun turrets turning and some of the sounds of some of like the spaceships and all that were done on his electric guitar.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, there's things like that. There's becoming the music director for, we all watch the Grammys, we watch the MTV Awards and all that. And we enjoy it. Yeah. But we forget about the band that's playing all the music behind it, right? There's a band that gets hired to do that.
Yeah.
You know, you've heard of Ricky Minor. You heard of Ray Chu and the crew and all those guys. So, you know, being a musician is not a bad thing. You know, it's needed because without musicians, Bruno Mars and Taylor Swift and Beyonce and all them couldn't go on tour.
Wow.
You know, you need musicians to go on tour. So, you know, there's those careers. Then, of course, there's the production side where you're creating music for artists. And everything we watch, commercials, television shows, everything has music in it.
Music is
you can't get away from it. Even in the elevator, even in Walmart, there's music for everything. Somebody has to create it.
Wow.
Cartoons, and I'm gonna stop at this one. Cartoon characters, animation creates no sound on their own.
Mm.
So there's a career called sound design. Sound designers come in and create all the sound for movies and, you know, television shows and all kinds of stuff. That's what they do, is just collect sound, record cars driving by fast, record ambiences, record what a city street traffic sounds like just so it can get put into a movie and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's so many careers and so many opportunities that utilize so many different skill sets that you learn in the traditional realm and in the non-traditional realm. You just have to know that they're there. And in most cases, a lot of people don't know that it's even there. They just think, oh, learn to play the piano, play at church. That's all you really can do. No. Mine started with the violin in the fourth grade in an after-school program, and now it's what I do for a living. So there's so many avenues that you could take.
That was Mario Maitland of the Maitland Conservatory talking with WLRH Community Newsroom producer Tim Miller. Tim also produces a podcast called In Tune with T. Mill, which aims to change the status quo, one voice at a time. Check it out on SoundCloud or find a link at WLRH.org where you can also listen to tonight's program. Our conversation with Oakwood Academy Choir Director Justin Jordan is coming up right after this bit of history from Moments of the Movement.
This is Moments of the Movement, Civil Rights and Change in America. A series featuring interviews with key civil rights leaders and participants, many of whom, until now, have never been given the spotlight they deserve. Alabama native Ruby Sales knows firsthand the sacrifices people made during the civil rights movement. Today, Sales is a noted theologian and founder of Spirit House, a nonprofit social justice organization. But as a student at Tuskegee in 1965, she was an unwilling participant in one of the deadliest days in the history of her state, Bloody Sunday. In an effort to protest the suppression of the Negro vote, as it was then called, civil rights demonstrators planned a march between Selma and Montgomery, Alabama's capital. As the protesters crossed the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, state troopers charged and bludgeoned them, thus creating one of the deadliest days in civil rights history. Sales discovered that something as seemingly innocuous as stopping by a local corner store could instantly turn deadly when a bullet meant for her killed another freedom worker, Jonathan Daniels, a 26-year-old white seminarian. Sales reflects on that dreadful Bloody Sunday.
We got to the store, and Tom Coleman was standing in the door, and he had a gun, and it's one of these moments where you're there, but you're not there. You sort of stopped in your footsteps, but you're trying to figure out how to move. And he said, I'll blow your brains out. And the next thing I knew, I was pulled backwards and I fell, literally fell. And I heard a shot and it was Jonathan. He shot Jonathan. Jonathan never made a sound. I think he was dead instantly or in a coma instantly. Father Marsrow, who was with us, the Catholic priest who had literally just come to South when Martin Luther King issued the call, held on to Joyce Bailey's hands, a local young girl at 17 years old who had been in jail. And they were running together. And the next thing I knew, there was another shot. And unlike Jonathan, Father Marsrow began to emit moans and begging for water. And Joyce Bailey, with some level of consciousness still working, headed that way and went around the, in the South, you always have these cars, went around to those empty cars and called my name. And it was when I could hear her that I realized that I wasn't dead.
Oral histories were conducted by the Southern Oral History Program in the Center for the Study of the American South at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill on behalf of the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture and the Library of Congress with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and distributed by PRI, Public Radio International. Online at newvisionsnewvoices.org.
This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, our weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. I'm Brett Tannehill. We're wrapping up a month of programs honoring Black History Month tonight. In our final segment, Beth Norwood sits down with Justin Jordan, conductor of Oakwood University's Academy Choir. Let's join the conversation.
I love sports. That's what I like to do. That is my passion. But I once heard someone say, your passion is what you do when you feel like it, and your purpose is what you do when, you know, sometimes you just don't feel like getting out of the bed, and that's music. That is music.
So you can do music anytime.
Anytime. It's something within me. You know, whether I'm sick, whether I'm tired, I find myself dragging my feet to rehearsals. So I love sports. I like to do sports, but music is my purpose.
So I imagine you find as you're absorbed in the music that it's a very healing thing for you, and it's like toning up and singing and being in the music is a very healing thing for you. You can just kind of get lost in it, right?
It's funny. Yesterday, I went into my rehearsal, and I didn't plan to sing anything. We had a lot of housekeeping rules we had to go over, but I needed to hear the prayer by Renee Clausen. And so it is definitely a healing experience that's unmatched to any other thing in the world. It breaks the barriers of language, culture, comfortability. It is a power. It is a force that is unexplainable, and it definitely acts as a healing device, for lack of a better way to put it. Yeah. So hopefully I answered your question.
Absolutely. Justin, I'd like to know about your early experiences with music and where you got started, when in life you came to music. I imagine that you were always singing, but did you play musical instruments as well?
Yes, I started out in the church. That's where everybody starts out.
Yes, they do.
And my mother started to involve my brother and I in violin lessons.
Oh, awesome.
We didn't want to play the violin. I wanted to play the drums. Neither did I continue to pursue. But I did, I was fortunate enough to join the Huntsville Boy Choir under the direction of the great Carmelita Gandy.
Oh, and she is great. She I is love wonderful. Miss Carmelita. Yes, she
ma'am.
Is.
And I never thought that I would have a future in choral music, but, you know, little did I know that God was kind of training my brother and I since then. And it's funny, we would sit in rehearsals, and because we wanted to be at football practice, you know, sometimes we would sing off notes on purpose. But started singing in the Huntsville Boy Choir and got accepted into the Academy for Academics and Arts and was under the tutelage of Deborah Fleischman when it came to musical theater. And I had many choral directors during my years there and was able to go to Lee. And I was in their vocal magnet program. We traveled the country singing choral standards, doing musical theater, Vivian Atkins, Barry Petty, Melinda Lombardino. Those are some of the names, Ron Harris, who really influenced my music career. And my brother went to Oakwood and joined the Aeolians, and I heard them sing, and man, it was just like they kind of hypnotized me.
The Aeolians really will blow you away, so it's no wonder that you are so impressed by that group. It's an amazing, amazing group.
I used to be a member of the Aeolians, and around the time of my junior year, I went to Dr. Ferdinand and I said, "Hey, man, I want to learn what you do. You're a magician out there." And
he
so
is.
he took me under his wing, and I started the conducting class, started taking private lessons. And as a junior and a senior, I was the assistant conductor of the group, and I was able to learn a lot about managing a group. You know, once I graduated, he became the chair of the music department. So he brought me on board to be the director of the university choir, which is now known as Voices of Oakwood University, which is open to more community members and people around the campus who may not be music majors and want to still sing choral standards. And so I did that for a year. That was last year, while still balancing another group known as the Oakwood Academy Choir.
Wow.
Which is the high school choir. So I had two ensembles.
That
is a lot going on.
Yes.
And the plan was for me to do 1 year and to go to graduate school. You know, my goal is to still gain my master's degree, my PhD. But I just couldn't leave my youngsters yet. I couldn't leave my youngsters. And so now I am at the Oakwood Academy doing their choir. And I still work with the Aeolians. You know, I'm here in Huntsville. I'm on campus. So I was able to sing with them when they went to Wales to compete for the Choir of the World. I will forever be an Aeolian. There's a phrase that says, once an Aeolian, always an Aeolian.
My guest is Justin Jordan. He is a musician, a singer, a conductor. Justin, who's your favorite composer let's go to several different categories. Let's say, who are some of your favorite choral composers and then some of the composers that do work that you do solo? Who are some of the people that you really like their music to perform and to also conduct?
Okay. My favorite composer, maybe of all time, is Bach. For a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. For a lot of different reasons. His ornamentations are very structured. They're very thorough. But if you were to kind of slow them down, you can create a lot of jazz idioms.
Oh, yeah.
Through Bach.
He's a jazzy guy.
He is a jazzy guy. And so Bach is my favorite composer. When we talk about choral composers, Morton Larderson. Morton Larderson, I love Sure on This Shining Night.
And the Lux Aeterna, isn't there a Lux Aeterna that he does, a really beautiful piece?
I love Morton Larderson. I love John Rutter has to be number one. My favorite choral piece of all time is What Sweeter Music Can We Sing Than a Carol? So I love the British sound.
Yes.
And then once I was able to attend Oakwood, because when I was in high school, I attended Lee High School Magnet Program. And so everything that was, all of the music experiences that I had were either in the black church and the Eurocentric form of choral music. It wasn't until I got to Oakwood where I started to learn about all of these black composers and their styles of arranging tight harmonies. If you think of Take Six,
Breath
of Life Quartet, so when we talk about choral composers, I have to put Dr. Ferdinand in there. He has a lot of choral standards. Saints, Are You Ready to Go? Always Remember. I have to talk about Mervyn Warren. I have to talk about Stacy Gibbs, who is just heading the spiritual game right now when it comes to composing. There's too many to count, but hopefully I gave you a few. I'm still trying to, hang on to some of those musicians who are enrolled at Oakwood now. who are the jazz kids.
Right.
I'm not necessarily one of them. I can, you know, if you give me some sheet music, I can sing the notes for you.
Right.
But it's funny, a lot of times if you go to Oakwood and, you know, you're learning a new piece, you will hear some of the great musicians who maybe, you know, Dr. Ferdinand is constructing what he wants, his image for a piece. Mm-hmm. And he'll say, you know, it needs the Oakwood sound. Well, what is the Oakwood sound? You know, and you talk about Thelonious Monk and how he was trying to explain what he wanted to gain from a composition.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just comes from experience. Those cats, you know, I think if we're talking about jazz guys, we can call them cool cats.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those cats were in depth when it came to their process of scoring one chord. You know, is the third too much? Is the fifth loud enough? You know,
they go over and over,
over
it.
And over,
I mean, it's just the one, the little tiniest pieces of the music. So I see exactly where you're coming from.
Yes,
it's just it's amazing the focus.
I have to. I'm a big proponent of celebrating even some of our youth who are taking those same idioms and taking them to a new level. And so just like you had people like Take Six and Cedric Dent and Mervyn Warren. You know, there's a young group now, and you heard it from me here at Oakwood, called A Different Effect. Kevyez Wilson, Azriel Davis, Carl Reed, Leonard Brown, Rod Lee, Kobe Brown. And those guys, you know, they just grew up listening to tight harmony, to jazz, to certain standards that create an experience that allow, you know, us to kind of create this sound that's really unexplainable. And I think, you know, you can sense that it's unexplainable with me trying to explain it now. So I'm just going to stop.
My guest is Justin Jordan, and he is a musician and conductor, a baritone, a singer, and doing some fascinating things with music. Actually, Justin, you have a CD for me here that involves one of the choirs that you're working with, and this is the Oakwood Adventist Academy Choir. Now, this CD is under the direction of you, Justin.
Yes, ma'am.
S. Jordan, conductor. I see here that there is also a string ensemble, and Dr. Wayne Buckner is accompanying here. We have a track that I'd love to get into that you've pointed me in the direction of this track. This is called And He Blessed My Soul by Anita Stevens Watkins. There's some strings and a guest soloist here. The arranger is Roberto Burton. Guest soloist is George Edwards. Can we go ahead and take a listen to this?
Let's do it.
Just one look at Jesus, my cares will all pass away. Only one look was all my life has been forever changed. One love, only one. at Jesus. In my cares will all pass away. Only my love was all I needed, and my life has been forever changed.
Yeah.
And he blessed my soul, a piece by Anita Stevens Watkins. Strings in that arrangement were arranged by Roberto Burton. You heard George Edwards as guest soloist, and the choir is the Oakwood Adventist Academy Choir, under the direction of Justin S. Jordan, who is my guest today. Justin, welcome back.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Beautiful piece, and thank you for this beautiful recording. It's called In My Soul, featuring the Oakwood Adventist Academy Choir. And thank you for your beautiful work with this choir.
Praise God, praise God.
Absolutely beautiful. We are talking today about music as it relates individually to Justin, and of course he has had a very rich musical life.
Yes, ma'am.
But we're going on to a little bit of history as it relates to the rest of the country.
Right.
If you want to do that, let's go there. Talking about music and growing up with music, specifically, I'd like to focus on the songs of the civil rights mm-hmm. era. Now, let me ask you this, Justin, about learning the history of this country. If you'll talk to me a little bit about what we find in the history books as children and
right.
How we experience this at first compared
right.
to what the real story might be.
And, you know, it's funny because for years, you know, Black history was February, Black and White, Malcolm X, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King. And I think as a child, I love those pioneers. But as a child, I think after a while it's like, okay, I want more. You know, is this only our history? And so, you know, having a book that was written by, you know, white men, it's only going to tell a portion of the story.
Right.
Now, if I was to write a story, I can make that story sound or exhibit any type of experience that I wanted to. So I think there's truth in a lot of stories. Some stories there may be lies, but what we do know is we don't have the full story.
Right.
We don't have the full story. Mm-hmm. And so I think the way that we gain the full story is through not necessarily looking in the books, but actually having relationships with one another so that we can learn from experience. You know, you're not going to find in a book about a, you know, 80-year-old grandmother who maybe struggled with her kids and was abused by the KKK. And then, you know, her children were abused by, you know, the criminal justice system. We're learning about those things now. And we're pushing to make our voices be heard. And even now, as you kind of mentioned, you know, Martin Luther King, and please, Justin, don't misquote Martin Luther King on the air. But to kind of paraphrase it, you know, being silent on a matter that we know is wrong is injustice. And I think sometimes people are silent just because of a lack of awareness. You know, it's the environment that they are in doesn't cause them to maybe feel as outraged as one who may continuously be in an environment, because we've come a long way.
Mm-hmm.
We've made progress. But for someone like myself, you know, I still feel the repercussions and the consequences of racism, systemic racism in the music industry, in education, in academics, in the lack of resources, in redlining, and so many different systems that were created to control a narrative.
Right.
To control policy, you know. So I think what we have to do is have these conversations, because if I'm not a product of what's going on, if I grew up in a suburb, you know, in a white family suburb, you know, I go to a wonderful school. All of my friends go to a wonderful school. I'm not going to be as conscious about what's going on in the community than somebody in that community.
Right.
But on the other hand, you do have those who are conscious and may not choose to speak out or join the cause. And we can look at that when it comes to so many different issues in America, when it comes to equal pay for women, when it comes to, you know, the, you know, gay rights, lesbians, transgender, you know, their fight. But I think what we can look at as the rubric and something that has been going on for years is the fight for civil rights, in the black community and how we need more people of all colors to fight with us. Because when we look at our office, you know, our presidential election, you know, you have people of all colors and backgrounds and ethnicities fighting for their Democratic ideas or their Republican conservative ideas, you know, and it takes all people. And so in the same right, if we're here in America and we're in this land together, just as I fight for a young person wanting, you know, lower tuition for college, you know, I'm with Bernie Sanders and I'm fighting for them. We need all races, all people at the same time fighting for equal rights when it comes to black people, fighting for, you know, changing the prison system. I mean, there's so many different things that we can talk about. And to bring it home, I think music has always been a mechanism and an art form that has helped us make progress. It has helped us understand, because when you hear those chords strike, when you hear Mahalia Jackson sing, when you hear Leontine Price, Kathleen Battle, Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, when you hear those artists, I don't care if you're from the Deep South, Coleman, Alabama. I don't care if you're from California. I don't care if you're from Alaska. It does something to you, and it allows you to understand that we are people. We need to heal. We need to help heal. We need to come together, and music has always been that powerful avenue to help us do that. And so that's my mission even now, to continue to use music through these young people that I'm able to teach and mold. And in return, they also teach me. So we gotta come on board, and I think music is a perfect way to do that.
Absolutely, and that's beautifully said. Just in case, I need to remind everyone, my guest is Justin S. Jordan. He conducts the Oakwood Adventist Academy Choir and does all kinds of other wonderful musical things. So thinking of music as a unifying force with people, and as also a communicating force and a way to express, to protest, to speak up and be heard, and to also just be beautiful and be shared and enjoyed by people. We have a piece here. This is sung by a lady I know, and her name is Julie Moore Foster.
Dr. Julie Moore Foster.
There you go. Dr. I knew
and
that.
And she's such a humble lady. She doesn't want you to, she say, just Miss Foster, but I have to make sure that I say doctor.
Yes, indeed. Yes, Dr. Julie Moore Foster. I'm glad you reminded me of that. She has a gorgeous album here. She's an absolutely gorgeous person, and we're going to hear her do a piece that is very important. It's called Come Sunday. This is Duke Ellington,
Duke,
right?
Ellington, Come Sunday. Yes, ma'am.
One of the great American composers.
Oh, yes.
God Almighty, God of love. others as you would have them do to you.
That's Duke Ellington's Come Sunday, performed beautifully by Dr. Julie Moore Foster of Oakwood University. Her CD is called Soul Songs, a Study of Songs That Move Us. My guest today is Justin S. Jordan, who's been so kind as to bring me this beautiful CD and to bring me these amazing perspectives as well. Justin, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again. We've had so much fun.
So talking about music as a unifying force and bringing people together, and specifically music of the civil rights movement,
this
is, of course, a very important part of our American history, and these songs are very powerful.
Mm.
And, of course, you working with music and coming across these pieces, Justin, what is your experience of this music, your experience personally?
Well, I've had many experiences with this music, whether it's, you know, spiritual, a way that I connect with God, whether it's healing, a way that he connects with me. And so I just know that this music has been imperative for not only Black history, but American history, because Black history is American history. It's world history. And, you know, somebody made a comment to me yesterday, and they mentioned, if you took Black people and Black music specifically out of America, we wouldn't be where we are.
Wouldn't be America, would it?
It wouldn't be America. So, I mean, I just think that pretty much sums it up. To have gone through so many trials and tribulations and to still be resilient, to still have hope, faith, to articulate the pain and turmoil, all of that to be connected with music, I mean, it's such a liberating thing. Such a liberating mm-hmm. thing. I think a lot of times we go through things as individuals, as humans, and we look for other humans to relate to us. But, you know, in our society, when somebody says, how are you doing? I'm doing fine. When in reality, you're probably going through a lot.
You're processing some stuff.
You know, and, but we're right. we're taught to just say, I'm doing fine, and we keep going.
Yeah.
Well, fortunately, music saves us from lying to ourselves, because mm-hmm. a lot of times we need to say, hey, I'm not doing good. And that person who has endured the same trials and tribulations can say, hey, well, I've gone through this, I'm going through it now, and through that we're liberated. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to shy away from that because we like to be Iron Man or Iron Woman. But
right.
what music does is, when you can get in your little corner and you can put your headphones on and you can listen to Duke Ellington's Please Come Down and See My People Through, I mean, it just touches a place that nobody else, nothing else in this world can touch. So That's all I can say.
Wow.
That's all I can say.
That's great. Absolutely great. Yes, indeed. I am with you on that. You have something coming up, I believe, that you've been working on, you'll be able to share with lots of other people coming
yes,
up soon.
Yes. We have a Black History concert coming up next Wednesday, February the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
It is at the Oakwood University Church at 7 p.m. And it's going to be a production. We're going to be highlighting a lot of, you know, historical moments. Even now, you know, we're making history when it comes to Black progress, but as well as the plight of Black people. And so we will do songs like Duke Ellington, Please Come Down. And Dr. Foster will actually be singing.
Beautiful.
You know, I have a lot of friends who will be on the program. We're going to be honoring some great people in the city. Kenny Anderson, who is the director of multicultural affairs, Patrick Wynn, CEO of the Boys and Girls Club, Dick Fountain, Tony McGinnis. Edwin Lightborn, Dennis Eason. And so we really want to make this a community effort. We're also partnering with the Boys and Girls Club. One of my goals, being that I grew up in public housing, going to the Boys and Girls Club, is to bring arts and the exposure of different forms of music, you know, not just urban music, but classical, jazz, into our community centers. And one of the other reasons that we're having this concert is because we want to draw support from our city. This past summer, the Oakwood Adventist Academy Choir was selected to be a premier choir in the Music for All National Choir Festival. Only 9 choirs in the nation was selected.
Wow.
And we have the opportunity to sing at St. John's Cathedral. We have the opportunity to sing at the Hilbert Circle Theater, which is the home of the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. So this is going to be a big concert. That's basically what I'm trying to say. You don't want to miss it.
Lord, dear Lord of love.
That was Justin Jordan, conductor of Oakwood University's Academy Choir, talking with classical music host Beth Norwood. Again, the Academy Choir's Black History Concert is this Wednesday night at 7 o'clock at Oakwood University Church. The public is invited to attend. If you'd like to hear tonight's Public Radio Hour again, no problem. Check it out at WLRH.org under the Programs tab. You'll also find links to more information about some of the things you heard tonight. You can also find the show and share your comments on the WLRH Facebook and Twitter pages. Tune in this weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features every Thursday night at 7 o'clock here on 89.3 Huntsville. Next month, we're honoring Women's History Month. Then we'll feature Season 4 of Invisibilia. This show is produced by our amazing team of staff and volunteers. Thanks for listening. I'm Brett Tannehill. Have a great night.